In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
Yeah.
The popcorn can't be beat.
That's true.
The sparkling
time to talk movies. Alan Adams of The Main Edge joins us in studio for Pass the Popcorn. Happy President's Day.
Well, thank you very much.
Who's your favorite president?
Man, that's tough. I'm always going to have a soft spot for John Adams and John Quincy Adams because family relations and whatnot. Of course, the classic Van Buren Boys episode of Seinfeld. That one has always stayed with me. Honestly, as far as contemporaries, I think I got to go with Jimmy Carter.
Yeah.
Just because he turned out to be maybe the best human being who's ever held the office.
Certainly the best ex-president we've ever had.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's where I'm at president-wise. Yeah.
I'm a big William Henry Harrison fan.
Sure.
You know, he only stayed around for a month.
If only. You know, it's funny. I actually just finished reading it's a relatively new book. It's called Author in Chief. It's this really interesting book about the writings of by presidents, whether we're talking about campaign books or legacy books or, you know, the wonky stuff in between. Because, you know, we've had some presidents, not for a while, but we had some presidents back in the day who were real nerds.
Oh, yes.
Like real big nerds. I think it's Hoover who wrote a mining textbook.
That's right. Yes.
You know, so it's just like, you know, stuff like that where you're just like, oh, right, these people didn't just spring forth fully formed and land in the Oval Office. Like they, you know, they lived lives and did things and experienced, you know, whatever, and had fields of expertise. Well, they used to have fields of expertise. and you know, it was really interesting to just sort of, it's a wonderfully researched book. And it's just, this wonderful collection of all the different, books, political and non-political that our presidents have written.
And later we'll have our musical salute to Warren Gamaliel Harding from Friend of Downtown, Al Stewart. And just in case you think, you know, these are dire times, it's never been this bad before. An awful lot of people post-election back in 1920 said they voted for Warren Harding only because he looked a lot like a president should look.
Sure.
And turned out to be a god-awful disaster, the Teapot Dome scandal, and on and on.
Yeah, so, and if I recall correctly, he was the one who was a little on the saucy side.
Oh, yes.
The collection, the letters and whatnot, where he,
yes.
I believe, if I remember correctly, he named his whatnot Jerry?
Yes, yeah. And may have done some things in a White House linen closet that Mrs. Harding didn't know about.
Well, you know, it's just... the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah. Be careful what you do with your Gamaliel. What?
What?
You went to the movies 3 times.
I did, a bunch of times.
Boy, oh boy. And I saw the titles and I felt bad for you a little bit, but maybe was there some redemption in your trifecta?
You know what, Rich? Here's what I'm going to say to you. It's never good when the best movie you see is Sonic the Hedgehog.
Oh, my. Oh, I worried about that.
That's not what you're looking for.
No.
That is not what you're looking for. I saw 3 films, the aforementioned Sonic the Hedgehog. I saw Downhill, which stars Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. It's a remake of the 2014 French film Force Majeure. And then Fantasy Island, which is... inspired by the late 70s TV show of the same name, produced by the folks over at Blumhouse. So they went straight horror with it. What would you like to talk about first, Rich?
Oh gosh. Well, let's talk about the continuing decline of Will Ferrell's career.
It's really funny. And I say it's really funny as in it's strange, not ha ha funny, because there's nothing ha ha funny about this movie. Despite every trailer trying its darndest to make you think that it's some sort of like lighthearted romp, typical of the sorts of things that you would expect from this particular pairing. for those who are unfamiliar, the original Force Majeure, it's this dark comedy based around the aftermath of a family man, a husband, abandoning his wife and two children when he fears that an avalanche is coming. Like, that's the central plot point.
Well, there's comedy.
You know what I mean? And so that's what we get in Downhill. It's you know, inspired by that. The script was written by Jim Rash and Nat Faxon, who they're Oscar winners, man. They won for The Descendants a few years back. They also directed the film. But it's so strange because it's one of those movies that can't get out of its own way. Like, doesn't seem to really understand what sort of tone it wants to adopt. Billy and Pete, Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Will Ferrell, they've brought their kids to the Alps for a skiing vacation. And, Pete's kind of a bossy guy. And, there's some clear underlying tension in their relationship. Nothing too drastic, but it's obvious and present. And then the avalanche happens and we get to watch as the sort of already tenuous bond between them begins to unravel, and how that involves their kids and you know, there's some other supporting characters, but it really just surrounds this family, and that's what it's about. And that's really all there is as far as plot is concerned. Like, I mean, the movie's like, it's less than 90 minutes long and it feels padded. Like, it's, you know, there are a lot of there are like four different shots of like the sun rising over the mountains, and there are like a handful of like wide shots of the family like skiing down the hill. Like, it all feels very like a lot of stuff that feels like filler. And like it clearly, there are times when it clearly wants to be a comedy, but those moments are so wildly undercut by what is a naturalistic and honestly quite good performance from Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Like, she's very, like, it's a very real, very sort of visceral kind of performance. And Will Ferrell, bless his heart, he's good at a lot of things, but it just, like, when he plays it, we're in a place with him where when he plays it straight, you just keep waiting for the other shoe to drop. And and when it doesn't, there's something unsettling about it. And that's kind of one of the big problems here, is that, like, they clearly like each other. They have a chemistry, but the way it's used is really weird. The performances that they're giving are coming from very different places. And then you've got some supporting performers who seem to have dropped in from completely different movies altogether. And there's just a lack of consistency. Truth be told, like, it's remarkable that with a movie with so many mountains could feel so flat.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, that's kind of where we're at. Like, there's just not a lot there. And, you know, when you don't have any sort of empathy for the people going through these sort of circumstances, it's hard to give a crap. And that's kind of where you're at when you're sitting and watching this movie. And, you know, my heart goes out to the many people, I'm sure, who are out there looking for a wonderful Valentine's Day date movie. And we're like, oh, this looks like fun. It's Will Ferrell and Julia Louis-Dreyfus. And they did not have fun, Rich, when they went to see that movie. They did not have fun, and they went home and they had to really sit there and reconsider their own relationships. And who doesn't want that on Valentine's Day?
Happy Valentine's Day, indeed. All right, well, let's move from Downhill to
The plane.
Fantasy Island. I didn't even know this was a thing.
Yes, it is a thing. It is a very, very bad thing. It is the fantasy gone wrong, worst case scenario kind of situation for this movie. Look, man, like, I like what Blumhouse does. Like, they've really sort of developed this wonderful formula for creating relatively low budgeted movies and really putting forward some solid work. Like, they've had some real successes. But, and here's the thing, Rich, nobody bats a thousand. There's always going to be misfires, and boy, oh boy, is this a misfire. I'll give you the gist, such as it is. A group of people win a contest to come to this island, the titular Fantasy Island, where they meet Mr. Rourke, played by Michael Pena. So you've got there's a party girl, Lucy Hale. Maggie Q is in this as a woman who sort of regrets not accepting a proposal years ago. You've got two brothers who want to be ballers, and so that's what their sort of, you know, fantasy is. and a dude who wants to be a soldier because his dad, you know, died a hero in the service or something like that. None of this, literally none of this matters, just so we're clear. And so they meet Mr. Rourke, and he comes out in the white suit and is like, hey, we're going to make all your fantasies come true, and everything's going to be real. Can't stress this enough, going to be real. And everyone goes along their merry way. And, you know, when stuff is real, they're like, well, what is this about? And so you've got the one who wants to get revenge on her high school bully, and just like it's all this stuff, all these weird and sort of kind of vague and uninteresting ideas being explored. And all the while lurking on the outskirts is Michael Rooker, looking like the wild man of Borneo, like just like hair, like on a scruffy beard, like wandering through the woods, trying to contact the outside world and let them know what's really going on at Fantasy Island, because you know there's stuff that's really going on, Rich. Like, yeah. That's how this works. And and then we get all these ridiculous fantasies that take very predictable monkey's paw type twists, where things go from, you know, good to bad to worse. At one point, there are drug lords and an extraction mission in Venezuela, and there's an underground torture chamber and all this stuff. And none of it matters a lick, because you will be bored to tears. And it turns out Mr. Rourke is evil. Sorry, spoiler alert. It's pretty clear that's how this is going. We all know he has reasons. You'll find out his reasons. They will be unsatisfying reasons, but you will find them out. The thing that irritates me, and Sheridan and I talked about this when we were walking out, by all measures, Fantasy Island should make a fantastic horror movie. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just like you have so much flexibility, and the possibilities are literally endless. And so to get like a bunch of like, you know, sort of boilerplate, like, you know, horror, like, C-list schlock, it's just like, why are you wasting my time? Like, you have the world has been laid out in front of you, and you're just going to show me a bunch of stuff that I've already seen before. Like, there's so much potential. And there are a couple of moments where we kind of see glimpses where it's like, oh, like if we had maybe spent some time here and maybe thought this through a little bit more, like it could have been a good movie. Like, that's the frustrating part about it, is you hate to see a bad movie, but you really hate to see a bad movie that could have been a good movie. Because it seems like such a waste. And again, it's surprising because, like I said, like Jason Blum is really good at this. And so it's funny to think about how things must have gone wrong along the way for it to wind up in this place. I really don't have anything to give you that is positive about this movie. Like, it's dull. It's uninteresting. Empathizing with the characters is impossible, and you spend the whole time sitting there either feeling like you're being condescended to, like your intelligence is being insulted, or just frustrated because you can really, like, anyone can see that this could have been good, and it just feels like, you know, again, like I said, a wasted opportunity.
All right, then, let me utter a phrase I'm pretty sure I've never said nor imagined myself saying. Let's talk about the best film of the weekend. Sonic the Hedgehog.
I'm as shocked as you are, Rich. I really am. And again, like, the bar's low. Yes, like, let's be clear about that. Like, I don't want to give anyone the impression that Sonic the Hedgehog is, say, a good movie. But it's better than I thought it was going to be. And it's better than I think it has any right to be. You know, video game adaptations don't have a great history as far as Hollywood is concerned. We've seen a little bit of movement towards the positive in the last couple of years, but for the most part, video game adaptations they fall flat at the box office, and they're bad in terms of commercial and critical success. Like, they just fail on every level, and so that bar again is low. Sonic clears it. Like, it's one of the better video game adaptations I've seen. One of the, dare I say it, one of the best. And again, that's damning with faint praise, but still. We'll give you the nickel synopsis. Sonic, a blue alien hedgehog who can travel at high rates of speed, He's an alien, by the way. I don't know if you knew that.
I was not aware
of that. I also was unaware. I was a Nintendo guy, so I didn't really do a lot of the Sega. Yes, he's an alien hedgehog who has come to our planet after his mentor, a giant owl, used magic rings to transport him to Earth to escape the echidnae that were trying to steal his powers. Okay. And so he winds up living in the woods outside the charming town of Green Hills, Montana. That's where Sonic lives, in the woods, in a little cave, outside a Montana town. He basically spends all of his time, it's kind of creepy, like looking in windows and generally just like hanging out outside everybody's houses at night.
He's a hedgehog.
Yeah, like really, like it's a little weird, a little stalkery. But he sort of develops these imaginary relationships with the people in the town, specifically the sheriff of the town, a gentleman by the name of Tom Wachowski, played by James Marsden, who really needs to talk to his agent. And so he has these sort of not really interactions with the people in the town, and he's sort of deluded himself into believing that he has these relationships. But ultimately, the loneliness starts to get to him, and he lashes out in such a way that it causes his powers and the energies that they bring to be brought to the attention of, well, the U.S. government. And the U.S. government decides that, there's only one guy for this job, and it's a sociopathic lunatic genius by the name of Dr. Robotnik, played by Jim Carrey.
Oh, dear God.
And a magnificent mustache.
Okay. And this is the best of the weekend.
Yep, I'm telling you, man.
Wow.
Dr. Robotnik comes to Great Hills to try and track down the source of this unexpected energy surge. Sonic, in an effort to escape his clutches, winds up revealing himself to Sheriff Wachowski, who accidentally tranquilizes him, which results in the loss of the technology Sonic needs to escape. So they have to drive to San Francisco. And so they drive to San Francisco. And you know what? I know I sound like a crazy person right now. Like, I know I sound like a lunatic.
No. Maybe a little.
And that's I'm gonna leave it at that because some other stuff happens, but let's be real. Like, it's not about what happens in a movie like this. Look, as you might imagine, story's a little thin. It's one of those movies that's built in such a way, it's clearly aimed at kids. Like, it is very much a kid movie. And I sat through it and I didn't hate every minute. But that's not nothing, especially for the ones, they're not all Pixar's and DreamWorks out there. Like, there are a lot of these movies, these kid-oriented films that are excruciating to sit through as an adult. This is not that. Like, there are a couple of okay gags, some fun action sequences. They changed his far too human teeth, so the character is not horrifying to look at. Ben Schwartz from Jean Ralphio from Parks and Recreation, he's the voice of Sonic, and he does fine. Like, he does a lot of voiceover work, so he knows, he's a pro. He knows what he's doing. James Marsden, again, needs to talk to his agent because how some guys, like, there are some actors who can feel natural and organic when they engage with the empty space that will eventually be occupied by a computer-generated character. Yeah. There are others who are not as good at that.
Yeah.
Mr. Marsden is not as good at that, and it shows in a couple of spots. But I gotta tell you, I enjoyed the crap out of Jim Carrey in this movie.
Really?
I did, and I think it's because it was very much a throwback type performance for him to the days before his shtick had kind of worn thin. And it was being reintroduced to the guy that I thought was hilarious when I was 18 years old. And that was a lot of fun. Like, and he clearly was given carte blanche. Like, they were just like, do your thing, Jim. Like, do what you want to do. And so, like, he's like screaming and mincing and running around and lurching and doing all the weird physicality that Jim Carrey has always done. And he's got this ridiculous mustache and he's saying all this ludicrous dialogue. And it's just, and it was just fun. And it was just, it felt very much of a piece with why I liked him in the first place. And is it a good performance? No. But is it an engaging performance? Like, I'd have to say yes. Like, I actually had a good time watching him. Again, cannot be stressed enough, not a good movie. I'm not saying this is a good movie, but what I am saying is it's also not a bad movie. And when it comes to video game adaptations in general, movies that had release dates pushed back significantly because of radical design changes, and movies for kids, like, not bad is pretty good.
We'll take it.
You know what I mean?
Compared to everything else you had to watch.
You know what I'm saying?
Thanks, Alan.
My pleasure.
Thanks for taking them for us. Alan Adams of The Main Edge, talking movies. Mondays on Downtown. We'll see you Wednesday. It'll be a much more enjoyable topic then.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Thanks, Al.
My pleasure.